Translation: the independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency, and at the time of annihilation gives them up to the external potency, and he remains a witness to it all. Purport: Lord Sri Krishna, being the supreme personality of Godhead and fountainhead of all other incarnations, is the only independent person. He enjoys his pastimes by creation as he desires and gives them up to the external energy at the time of annihilation. By his internal potency only, he kills the demon Putana, even though enjoying his pastimes in the lap of his mother Yashoda. And when he desires to leave this world, he creates the pastime of killing his own family members, Yadukul, and remains unaffected by such annihilation. He is the witness of everything that is happening, and yet he has nothing to do with anything. He is independent in every respect. Maharaj Parikshit desired to know more perfectly, for a pure devotee ought to know him well. Om Gyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jayashi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna, it's nice to be back. So when I was reading this, I was just thinking about how many people have such misconceptions about God. About, you know, if you were to stop like a random person in the street and ask him about God, he would give you many different theories and opinions. And if you asked him or asked her, you know, what is the basis for your statement, they would say, you know, I think, I feel. It wouldn't be based on any scientific, any scriptural evidence. It would be purely based on speculation, mental speculation. You know, so the people, because they're materially conditioned, they try to apply their mundane logic based on their mundane experience on God. That God can only do this. God can only do that. I remember a few years ago, I was speaking to some of my friends from the Abrahamic tradition. And he said, you know, I heard that God in your religion gets married. He's born. And, you know, he fights. And he eats. He does everything. You know, how can that be God? So I said to him, why can't you do it? He's God. Everything comes from him. Everything belongs to him. Why can't you do that? So people like to speak about God, especially people from different religious traditions or mental speculators and philosophers, but they can't speak about God. Why? Because they have no information about God. It's purely based on speculation. And even the different religious traditions, they don't really give you like a, you know, scientific, clear description of God. You know, they say he's beautiful, but how is he beautiful? What does he look like? If you, you know, like we can experience that in our own lives when you're speaking to someone on the phone. You know, our relationship with that person, our connection with that person is kind of limited because we can't see what the person looks like. You can't really build a relationship with someone if you don't know what they look like. But when you see them, you can experience more of their personality. You can experience, you know, their body language, how they come across. So you can build, you can get a bit more closer. So Parikshit Maharaj is being a pure devotee. He wants to know about Lord Krishna. He wants to know more about Krishna's glories. Why? Because when you know more about God, then you can love him more. You can appreciate him more. You can understand him more. So, it's explained that, Krishna's appearance and disappearance is compared to the rising of the sun, sunrise, and the disappearance of the sun, sunset. It's not that the sun was born in the morning and it dies in the evening. No, it's always there. It's just rising in a certain part of the world, and then it's setting and it's rising in another part of the world. So Krishna's appearance is like that. He appears by his divine will, and then when his pastimes are concluded, he will go on to another part of the another place in the universe and manifest his pastimes. So when we look at Krishna's birth, it's very unique because, you know, Krishna, we know when we read the Krishna book, we read that how, you know, he displayed his four-handed Vishnu form. Then he came as a baby. You know, it was a very unique, very unique pastime to show that Krishna appearing he's not just an avatar of Vishnu. He is avatari. He's the source of Vishnu. So when we study, it's explained that he manifests his pastimes by his internal potency. The internal potency has many different names. You can call it Yogamaya, you can call it Chit Shakti, you can call it Antaranga Shakti. You know, sometimes we can also call it Maya. And so Maya is explained that Yogamaya creates a situation where the shackles are unlocked and the guards are put to sleep. So if you go to Vrindavan, there's a temple where there's two deities of Yogamaya. I can't remember one of their names. I went there. Bandi Devi, and there's another name. Some of you may have been. So there's two forms of Yogamaya which participate in that pastime. So one opens the shackles, the prison doors, and one puts the guards to sleep. And when Krishna comes to Vrindavan as a baby, Krishna displays many wonderful pastimes. He as a baby he kills Putana, he kills so many demons. You know, while this is happening, the residents of Vrindavan are like, you know, our Krishna is so wonderful, he's so amazing. But they never think, well, how can a child do this? You know, how is it possible? Because it's explained that the Yogamaya potency covers the residents of Vrindavan, so they never think he's God. They just think he's just this beautiful person. And it's also explained that even Krishna is also covered by Yogamaya, by his will. He wants to be covered. So he knows, at the same time, he doesn't realize he's God, and at the same time, he does realize he's God. So like in the pastimes of Damodar, where Mother Yashoda is chasing Krishna, because, you know, Krishna was breaking pots and stealing butter from people's houses. You know, Mother Yashoda is chasing, and it's explained that Krishna is fearing for his life. You know, he's so scared, he's crying, he's trembling, then Mother Yashoda ties him to the mortar, and, you know, then the pastime happens when he pulls down the twin tamala trees. So even Krishna is covered by it, because he likes it. It enhances the mood. Otherwise, if he was God, if he was fully cognizant of him being God, how would he appreciate that pastime? How would he be able to take it seriously? That, you know, I'm just a cowherd boy, you know, I'm scared of my mom and dad. It would be very difficult. So Krishna wants that to happen because he finds that pleasurable. It's explained even when he kills the demons in Vrindavan, it's explained that he doesn't himself personally do it. It's a form of Krishna called Vasudev Krishna. So he kills the demons. Krishna is just enjoying. You know, he's with the gopis, with the gopas, with the cows, you know. He doesn't have to do any of that type of work because it's unbecoming of Krishna because he's God. You know, just like in a company, you have the different department heads. You know, you have a department head of marketing or finance. Then, you know, you have vice president and you have the top leader who's the president or the CEO. He's not going to come down and do the different departmental jobs because it's unbecoming of him. He doesn't need to do that. The other people can do that. So Krishna is also like that. He doesn't need to do all that. And then at the same time, his pastime, Yogamaya creates the pastime where he can enjoy himself. Now, Yogamaya does, cover people. It does cover people's from recognizing Krishna as God. But there's a difference between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Mahamaya takes you away from your real identity as an eternal servant of Krishna, whereas Yogamaya covers your identity to enhance the pastimes of Krishna. Just like in a Bhagavad Gita, you know, Arjuna is a great devotee of Krishna. You know, he's become bewildered. You know, he's having a moral dilemma. You know, should he fight? Should he do his duty? You know, then this, and, you know, Prabhupada explains that, you know, Arjuna knows his duty. Arjuna, he's a kshatriya, he's a cultured person. He knows the goal of life is to surrender to Krishna, but he plays that role so Krishna can speak the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of us and everyone else that was listening, so that we can all be delivered. So Yogamaya is there. Mahamaya does something different. It takes you away from your real identity of a servant, of understanding you are a servant of Krishna. So we know that Maya, it attracts you to the material nature, and it covers you. It keeps you. There's like a two step process going on. But Mahamaya doesn't bring you to Krishna. Now it's also explained. Prabhupada explains that actually Yogamaya and Mahamaya are actually the same person. So if you see a deity of Yogamaya, you'll see it's the Durga form. It looks, you know, it's the Durga form. But so they're actually the same person. But how she reciprocates is dependent on how you approach her. If you approach her as a devotee of Krishna, then she will treat you as a devotee of Krishna. She will help you to progress in bhakti. Whereas in Mahamaya, if you approach her as a materialist, as a non-devotee, she will take you away from Krishna. And you know, in India, especially, Maya has many different names. You know, I mean, there's different regional dialects, so in different places of India, they call it by different names. But there's names like Chandi, there's Bhadra, there's Kali, there's Durga. So there's many different names. But the purpose is the same: is to take you away. You know, Mahamaya is like the prison guard. She basically keeps you within this material world. She has a trident. So she's like, you know, poking you, keeping you within the material world. She's not letting you leave. You know, and she tests you. You know, she creates the temptation to engage in the sinful activities. So, you know, every age has its own influence. So we're covered by the influence of Kali. So Kali is a servant of Maya Devi. And Maya Devi creates a temptation to engage in the four sinful activities. So people, you know, when they're trying to understand Krishna, like, you know, it's like Krishna, you know, we understand there's three energies. There's, you know, the Yogamaya, there's the marginal energy, there's the external energy. But, you know, and there's many subsets of that. But, you know, we shouldn't think they're just three energies. There's unlimited energies. You know, so it's like Krishna's energy is unlimited. They're always increasing. So, you know, like sometimes people say, you know, once someone said to Prabhupada, you know, can God create something that he can't lift? And Prabhupada says, sure, he can. But then later on, he'll be able to lift it. Because his energy, his potencies are always increasing. They're not static. They're always increasing. So Krishna is not a static person. It's not like he's a material person. You know, we read in Isha Upanishad that there's many holes coming from the complete hole, but it's not that the complete hole is being drained, you know, it's still full. So in the same way, that when Krishna's potency, when Krishna's manifesting things, he's not losing anything. In fact, his potencies are increasing more and more and more. So like, you know, like sometimes if Krishna wanted to, he can create a situation where he doesn't know something, but then later on he'll be able to understand something, understand that thing. Because he's unlimited, he's always increasing. That's the meaning of God. So anyway, so you know, this is like a concept that's very difficult for people to understand. You know, so like we see that people, not just people who are not familiar with the Vedic culture, but even people familiar with the Vedic culture, you know, they try to read Bhagavad Gita and they try to, you know, analyze it, understand it, and they get the completely wrong understanding. Like, you know, we have Mahatma Gandhi's translation of the Gita, and that's about ahimsa, you know, non-violence. And, you know, that's quite an interesting thing, because if you look at the front cover of the Bhagavad Gita, it's on a battlefield. There's a war about to happen. And the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is for Arjuna to do his duty and fight. Krishna says, "Mamanusmara yudhyacha, fight, think of me and fight." You know, then there was one book written by one scholar where he said, actually, you know, Bhagavad Gita only has 50 verses. The other verses are concocted. So, or you know, sometimes, you know, there's one person in India, he received this great award from the government for being a great Shastri, you know, in Ayurveda, in astrology. But then he said, well, you know, Bhagavad Gita is not really real. It didn't really happen. You know, it's mythology. You know, there's no such thing as Lord Ram or all these wonderful, crazy things that you read about. It's all bogus. So, like, these people read it and they completely miss the point. You know, it's a fact. Kurukshetra is there. You can go there. You know, you know, Krishna is a historical person, as Prabhupada says, Krishna appeared. So Prabhupada says in the introduction to, so, you know, people are reading the Gita, they're getting the complete wrong understanding. So Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the way to access the Bhagavad Gita is by having theoretical faith that Krishna is God. So he says that in the introduction. Why does he say that? Because then you're approaching Gita with a non-envious mood. You're approaching it with, okay, I'm doing this for the purpose of an experiment to understand, and I'm going to accept the conditions of the experiment. And Krishna's condition is, you know, you accept me as God, even theoretical. So that means you don't even need to fully believe it. You do it for the purpose of reading it. And then you have access to the Gita. That's why we see when many people who receive books from Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's translation of the Gita from devotees, they understand it, and they're able to, you know, it penetrates them. It penetrates and changes their consciousness. Whereas if you give another Gita, it won't make no sense. Like, I remember reading the Gita when I was about 10. You know, I was reading it in Hindi, because I was learning Hindi at the time. It didn't really have much of an effect on me. It was from some other commentator. But then when I read Bhagavad Gita as it is, and it's interesting because, you know, like, I was reading it, I didn't really understand it. But, you know, but that Gita later on had an effect on me. And I was thinking about, you know, it's explained that just by giving oral reception, just by hearing it, just by reading it, it doesn't matter if you don't understand, the message which is coming in Parampara will have an effect on you. Why? Because it's coming with the right it's coming with the right intention, with the right consciousness. Because when you're reading the commentary of Prabhupada's translation of the Gita, the Bhagavatam, you're also getting the commentaries of the Acharyas, you're also getting their blessings, you're also getting their association. So they are giving you permission to understand this. So they're helping you, they're giving you the intelligence to understand this. Because otherwise you can't understand it. It's a fact, you know, and there's many people outside our society who know Sanskrit back to front, but when they read the Gita, Bhagavatam, even they don't get it. They miss the point. They don't come to the conclusion, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. So that's a very important point, just having that theoretical faith. So when we look at the Gita, you know, there's a famous verse, you know, Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya duskritam dharma samstapana praya sambhavami yuga yuga. So, you know, Krishna gives three reasons for his appearance. You know, paritranaya sadhanam. He comes to protect and reciprocate with his devotees, with his followers. You know, we see that he was asked by Lord Brahma to come and reduce the burden of Mother Earth, Bhumi Devi, who came in the form of a cow, because she couldn't take Kamsa's atrocities against the brahmanas, against people. And he came to reciprocate. The second part is, you know, he comes to destroy the demons. You know, like it's explained Krishna killed so many demons as a child and while he was, you know, the king in Dwarka. And, you know, there's like an interesting chronology of that. If you study, there's like one scholar devotee, he made like a study of this. He said the way he did it was very interesting. So he does that. And the third is he comes to establish religious principles. He comes to establish bhakti and dharma. He comes to establish the yuga dharma, the religious principles. So, you know, and, you know, Prabhupada kind of indicates that, you know, it's implied that the message of the Gita was somewhat lost and Krishna came to reestablish that. So Krishna has many purposes. But we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita that he came. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came? He came to spread the Sankirtan movement and to taste the devotion that Srimati Radharani has. So he came with the mood of Srimati Radharani to experience what that is. And that's God trying to understand his consort, who's also a part of him. He doesn't understand it fully. He wants to experience that bliss. He wants to understand that mood. So he came like that. So it's so Krishna is he's inconceivable. I remember hearing in a class one devotee said that, you know, Krishna's pastimes are incredible, and one devotee who was there was quite scholarly said, no, Krishna's pastimes are not incredible, they're wonderful, because incredible means it's hard to believe, it's difficult to believe. But what's difficult to believe? It's of course it can happen. Krishna's God, he can do anything. So therefore we say Krishna's pastimes are wonderful. And I think in one chapter of the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, he labels one chapter, Wonderful Krishna, if I'm correct. I mean, I read it a while back. So, you know, Krishna's pastimes are wonderful. We shouldn't say they're incredible. I mean, I've said it in a few times. And if you think about it, well, they're not incredible. It's not difficult for Krishna to do this. It's not difficult for him to lift a Govardhan hill with a finger for 7 days. It's not difficult for him to expand himself into so many forms when Lord Brahma took away the cows and cowherd boys. You know, also something I was thinking about was that, you know, just because you become a devotee, like Parikshit Maharaj is asking more questions, you know, to Shukadev Gautama, because he wants to know more about Krishna Tattva. But, you know, we read even Lord Brahma, when he came to see Lord Krishna, he arrived to give his report, annual report. So he came to the door, the guard door, and the guard said, you know, who are you? So Lord Brahma said, what do you mean, who am I? I'm Lord Brahma. Tell Lord Krishna I'm here to give my report. So then the guard went inside, into the assembly, and he came back and said to Lord Brahma, which Lord Brahma are you? You know, and it's like, Lord Brahma thinks, what do you mean? There's only one Lord Brahma. So anyway, after a while, he was able to come in, and to his amazement, in the assembly, he saw so many different Lord Brahmas. You know, some had 10 heads, some had 100 heads, some had 1,000 heads, some had 1,000,000, 10,000,000. It was like he couldn't believe what he was seeing. And he saw all these Lord Brahmas giving their reports, and they were from different parts of the different universes where there's different dimensions. So, you know, and he thought, and you know, Lord Brahma is like the first person to receive Vedic knowledge, you know, Tene Brahma Hirda Ya Adikavya. He's the first person to receive Vedic knowledge. He's the most intelligent person in the universe. He's the engineer of this universe, and even he doesn't understand Krishna. And he's got four heads, you know, and each head is like probably equal to what the sum total of everyone in this all the jivas' intelligence. So even he doesn't understand Krishna. And he says that, you know, people say they understand Krishna. Let them think that I can't understand Krishna fully. And even Anantashesh, who's like he's an expansion of Krishna. Even he can't completely glorify Krishna with his unlimited mouth, because it's impossible. So Krishna is inconceivable, he is unlimited. And, you know, and it's difficult for someone from a mundane platform, or even from the different religious traditions, to understand that, you know, because they don't understand inconceivability. They think, you know, God can't do this, God can't do that. Like, you know, like for them it's very difficult. God eats, you know, God rests, you know. Like, I remember hearing like one class when these people, they came in a temple in America, they wanted to see Krishna, and the devotee said, well, Krishna's resting. And they said, God cannot rest. You know, I think he was a born-again Christian or something. You know, God can't rest. Well, it's interesting because, you know, in their religion, God rests on the sixth day or something after creating, you know. So it's interesting. But, you know, so Krishna is, you know, Krishna is like, he's in the Goloka Vrindavan, he's personally swayam there, you know, and he's just chilling, he's doing his pastimes, and all these different expansions are doing the work. So, you know, Mahavishnu is creating universes from the pores of his universe. Then, you know, Garbhadak Vishnu comes into the ocean, he fills up the ocean, each ocean halfway with his with the water coming from his body. Then Kishoradakshai Vishnu pervades everything. So all these different expansions are doing something, you know. Even Sadashiv is an expansion of Krishna. You know, so all these different expansions do something. Krishna doesn't need to do anything, and that's actually what God is. He's just chilling. He's relaxing. So we should be intrigued by this. You know, when we hear this, we should be like, wow, I really want to know more. Like I was reading, many years ago, I read a book called Laghu Bhagavat Amrita, and it's very interesting. It's explaining that how Krishna... When Krishna kills the demons, they get a form. They end up going to the spiritual world and getting a form. Prabhupada indicates that in the Krishna book as well. So it's explained, not even Lord Ram, not even the Shingadev, not even these other persons, when they keep demons, do these personalities get a form in the spiritual world? It's explained that when Krishna kills them, they get a form in the spiritual world. So I was quite surprised to read that. So there's so much we don't know. So there's so much to hear about Krishna. Like, you can't write everything down about Krishna. It's not possible, you know. Even the Vedas don't make that claim. You know, like I was reading that in one book, was saying that in the demigod planet, like in our planet, we have like 400,000 verses of the Puranas. In the higher planetary system, there's 1,000,000,000 verses of the Puranas. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Shishi Sitaram Lakshmi Hanuman Ji Ki. Shishi Bolitai Ki Jai. So there's so much to be said about Krishna. So we, you know, So like we only have limited information here. In the higher planetary systems, they know more. And when you read, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it explains that, you know, because there's concentric circles around each universe, and explaining each concentric circle, because it's made up of the subtle energies. They're called, I think it was Avaraha, something like that. I can't remember the name, Sanskrit name. But it's explained there's a form of the Lord, you know, who's the predominating deity there. And it's not the spiritual world. It's kind of like it is a spiritual one and it isn't. And it's unlimited opulence. And there's a kingdom there. There's devotees there who are worshipping that form. There's so much to be said, but we can't fully understand it. So even when we become perfected and pure, still we have much more to learn. So, anyway, I'll finish here. If anyone wants to make a comment or ask a question. Yes, Prabhuji?
Krishna, thank you for the amazing lecture. So just a question on the incarnations of, of Krishna, or the different expansions of Krishna.
Yes.
I said, from what I got is that Krishna is the one who's performing pastimes,
yeah,
and his other expansions such as Mahavishnu and Pradaksha Vishnu are taking care of the universe. What yeah. about these other incarnations or expansions who are in the spiritual world? Narayan and so on. Are they conducting pastimes, or what is their role?
Well, I mean, if you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, explains that Lord Ram has his own planet and he's doing his pastimes. Because most of the planetary, most of the different planetary planets in the spiritual world, all the Vishnu forms, like Lord, they actually are Narayan forms. They don't have, they don't have the forms they manifest in this world. Only Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, they manifest those particular their individual forms. So they're just engaging in the pastimes. So like I explained, there's a personality called Gopu Kumar. He goes to the Vaikuntha planets and he comes with Lord Vishnu. And, you know, it's explained all the, because, you know, there's kingdoms there's devotees there. And they're all worshipping Lord Narayan in their ways, you know. So then Gopu Kumar, he travels through there, goes through to the different spiritual planets. He goes to, because sometimes he has to come back to Earth to cultivate his sadhana, to go back to the next planet. So he goes to Lord Ram's planet, he goes to Dwarka, then, you know, finally he goes to Goloka Vrindavan. So these personalities are doing different things. There's also different expansions. For example, there's an expansion of Sadashiv in the spiritual world is Vishnu Tattva, right? So then you have a different person. You have Vishwaksena, which is the spiritual form of Lord Ganesh. He's considered to be like a general, like an army person. He's like one of the, you know, not that you need that in the spiritual, but it's just there because, you know, it suits the mood of the Vaikuntha planets. So they're doing different things, but generally, it's not like, they're just engaging in pastimes there. So there's explained that, before you enter this, just I think after the Brahma Jyoti, there's a place called Maheshtam, where Lord Shiva. Sorry, no, it's not Kailash. Kailash is different. That's Maheshtam. Kailash is different. So Maheshtam, where Parvati is sitting on Lord Shiva's lap, and he's reading Bhagavatam. So it's people who are devotees of Lord Shiva, and they've got devotional tinge. So Lord Shiva, he preaches to them Bhagavatam, and you know, from there they go into the spiritual world. So you can read that in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It talks about that. And there's another scripture, I can't remember, I read it a while ago. So there's pastimes happening there. It's not, in the spiritual world, there's not so much creation because there's no time there. Creation is an aspect of time. So there's no time there because it's eternal. But there are things that, you know, there are things like for example, Vishwaksena, there's armies, there's generals. These things are there. But it's not that they're going to war because there's no one to fight with because everyone's a devotee there. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Sorry, just a follow-up. So this form of the holy name.
Form of the holy name?
Yeah, the form of the holy name, because they say that the holy name is an incarnation of Krishna. how can we perceive, at least in the preliminary stage of chanting the holy name, before we can get to, you know, Guna Rupa and Leela, before we can get to this part where we can actually, you know, experience higher stages of the holy name. How can we have a relationship with the holy name? How can we, at the part where the holy name reveals the form and the qualities and the pastimes, at least in that way we can actually perceive something tangible. In this preliminary stage of just hearing the holy name, what kind of relationship can we have with the holy name?
Well, I mean, first of all, you need to understand the tattva of Krishna and his holy name being non-different. So when you're chanting Krishna's holy name, you're doing it with full knowledge, at least in the preliminary stage, that he is, when you're chanting that, you're associating with Krishna. So you have karma and arthas which don't allow you to appreciate that straight away. But the more you chant, you know, it's explained in the third canto of the Bhagavatam that your subtle body starts to dissolve, right? So that as it's dissolving, you're coming more in contact with the spirit. So when you're chanting more, you know, your subtle body is being dissolved and you're starting to realize, appreciate more. You're starting to get genuine taste. You know, there's three stages of chanting, right? There's offensive, there's namba, and then, you know, the perfected stage. So you're going through the stages. And then slowly these things will come. But the point is to keep chanting and cultivating knowledge and chanting with sincerity without offenses. And these, you know, nama, guna, lila, rupa will all come. But it doesn't come straight away. But you have to keep chanting. It could come at the end of life, but the point is to keep chanting and chant with love and feeling. But you should chant. You should study books on the chanting Hare Krishna. There's books written. There's many ISKCON books you can read. You know, there's books by I can't remember. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a book, Harinam Chintamani. He talks about all this. So if you should study that and keep cultivating, reminding yourself of it. Okay, is that okay? You had a question, Prabhu. Go. I can't hear you.
You mentioned in your class that Krishna doesn't kill the demons, but Vasudev Krishna does.
Yes.
So I'm just thinking, where is this from? And if you can elaborate on this and give some reference. Yeah.
So you know, Krishna has different expansions, right? So the Krishna that came 5,000 years ago, he's Swayam Krishna. He's the original form of Krishna. The original form of Krishna comes once in a day of Brahma, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes once in a day of Brahma. Now, Krishna, his original form, he's not engaged in killing demons, right? His part, his thing is more with be acting as a cowherd boy, doing the Rasalila with the gopis, being with his parents, playing with the monkeys. That's what he originally does. Okay, he's a 16-year-old eternally youthful person. That's the original form and pastime of God. Fighting is not the occupation of the original form of Krishna. So that aspect is done by his expansion. There's an expansion called Vasudev Krishna, which, you know, I guess for the way I understood it, was it has a tinge of Lord Vishnu in it, where that particular form engages in fighting with the demons. So, you know, when Krishna leads with Akrura, when he leads Vrindavan, if you read in Krishna book, it's explained that Krishna stays on in Vrindavan, but his expansion, Vasudev Krishna, leaves. So he's the one who speaks Bhagavad Gita and goes to Dwarka.
Yes, that's understandable. That's in Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
But I'm asking where you got this point from, like, if you can reference it to me.
Yeah, Prabhupada says it in the... I can't remember the exact page and chapter, if that's what you're asking, but it's in the Krishna book. Prabhupada says it in his lectures. If you do a Veda-based check, you can find that. Yes, Vasudev Krishna, yes.
Vasudev Krishna is fighting with the demons.
Sorry?
Vasudev Krishna is the one who fights with the demons.
Yes. Okay. So you can do Veda-based check. I've heard it in Prabhupada's classes.
Okay, thank you.
Hare Bol Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. I just had a quick question. You were mentioning in your class that in order to fully dive into the teachings of the Gita, one needs to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I was just wondering, like, on Sankirtan, a lot of times we meet people which they very averse to, like, accepting any kind of a religion or believing in God or something. like that. So what's the best way to connect those people to the teachings of the Gita?
To make them like qualified to access the Gita?
In the sense of like, because you were mentioning one can't really dive into the teachings of the Gita without accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
And those people struggle with accepting a God.
Hmm.
So what's the best way to connect them to the Gita?
Well, I think I'm not really experienced book teacher, but there's other people here who could give a better answer than me. But my understanding is that when you stop someone, it's like you try to make a connection with the person, and you get them to touch the book, look at the book, maybe even read something from the book, and you try to explain the book to how it's relevant and applicable. You may, depending on the person's qualification, you may go into that. But the point is, when the person reads the Gita, the introduction, Prabhupada's preaching is what convinces him. Prabhupada's preaching is what purifies him. Now, we don't really say, you need to have free vertical, but if you study the Gita, it says that there. And because he's receiving that, because that person's received it and he's given donation, it's like he's performed a Gyata Sukriti. So he's got some spiritual qualification for just doing that. So that gives him also access as well to the Gita. You know, it's not like you can just pick it up. You know, you've done something to come into that situation to get access to the book. But I've never gone into that when I've tried to distribute books, and a few times I've done it. Maybe people who do book distribution here would know better.
Thank you. Yeah, the question was not specifically about book distribution, but generally in our preaching to new people, I think.
Mm.
So even when we do online courses or something like that.
So you're saying just generally how to preach to someone mentioning that principle?
Yeah, generally how do we connect people who don't believe in God or struggle with accepting that concept, how do we connect them to the Gita?
Well, I mean, if someone doesn't believe in God, then you have to show how it's reasonable to believe in God's existence, no? I don't think that's difficult. And, you know, there's material problems, and material solutions are not solving them. Only spiritual solutions can solve material problems. You know, like, we don't want to die, we don't want to go old, we don't want to suffer from disease, because these are coming from the material body. So then you can refer to the Gita and say that, well, you know, the Gita explains that the soul is, that we're not the body, we're the soul, and the soul is eternal. It's free from all these conditionings of the body. So, you know, it's you can mention all these different things, and then you can connect them to the Gita, then, encourage them to read it. But, there's many different ways. I mean, I don't think there's just one way. I mean, I'm sure everyone here has that experience, but you have to be intelligent, you know. It's not like you stop someone and you start speaking about the Rasleela, you know. Krishna's having pastimes with the gopis and he's doing these funky dance moves, you know. It's not going to go very far. But I'm sure there's many people here who've been preaching for a while. They can also share their experiences. I have a problem? So is you?
Thank you. Just going back to Antaranga Prabhu's question.
Yeah.
There is a verse in the Adi Leela, chapter 4.
Mm.
Now, I've got it in Bengali, and I'll give you my
English translation.
Imperfect translation, but I don't know if it's in English, but it's Ata Eva Vishnu Takan Krishnara Sharire, which means, therefore Vishnu is in the body of Krishna. And the second line is, Vishnu Dvari Kari Krishna Asura Sanghara. Krishna destroys the demons through Vishnu. It must be there in Sanskrit as well.
Yeah, I just wanted. Can I just add to that? I just remembered something. So I asked one pundit, and I said that, you know, why is Krishna not mentioned when you're doing yajnas, for example? It's always Lord Vishnu, and he said that, you know, he said that Krishna's form is so delicate and so tender. You know, why would you want to put him in that situation? So Vishnu's body is more suitable for that. So he was saying that if you look at the Vedas, there's more references to Lord Vishnu than Krishna. And his name is in the context of yajnas, rituals. Whereas Krishna, that's not the way we worship Krishna. The way of worshipping Krishna is totally different from worshipping Lord Vishnu. So if you go to Sri Vaishnava temple, it's very ritualistic. But if you go to Vrindavan, it's a different mood altogether. Okay. So if someone had a question?
I found the reference. I found where it said passive, but I just lost it. So
okay, that was the quickest. Wow.
Sorry. So just a follow up to that thing. So just to get it right. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, or in the beginning stages of practicing Bhakti,
yeah,
all these paying obeisances, all these sacrifices, all these rules and regulations,
yes,
they are the object is Lord Vishnu and not Krishna.
Well, I mean, generally, I mean, Krishna is the source of Vishnu. Ultimately, you're worshipping Krishna, but Krishna, you don't worship. This is what I was told by a pundit, because I asked his question, and he explained that generally, see, Krishna, the way you approach Krishna, the way you worship Krishna, especially in his Vrindavan form, there's a different mood there, you know? It's not awe and reverence, it's madhurya, it's sweetness, right? And when you're doing rituals, like yagyas and You're invoking Lord Vishnu because his form is suitable for that. His mood, like, you know, he likes fighting. He likes. He's quite you know, for want of a better terminology, like, he's quite versatile. You know, you can use him for that purpose. You know, but Lord Krishna is a different mood altogether. It's like, you know, it's quite formal. Lord Vishnu is formal, and Lord Krishna is informal. But you don't use the informal for the formal. You know, like a judge and a judge at home is a parent. It's two different moods. You know, they're the same person, but Krishna is the origin of that person. So Krishna, to worship Krishna and to worship Lord Vishnu is a different mood. So if you go to any of the, if you've been to South India, if you go to the Sri Vaishnava temples, it's very awe and reverence. You know, we also have awe and reverence. Like we worship, Prabhupada explains in one letter, he explains that we're worshipping Radha Krishna here in the we're worshipping them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan because they're accepting worship in that mood. But ultimately, that's not how you worship them. You worship them in the Vrindavan mood, you know, in the Raghunuga mood. So that's much more deeper. But because we're not qualified to come onto that step, we have to go through that process. Yeah, you found it. You want to share it? Let's hope you don't lose it.
So this is from teachings of Kapila Dev. I find the. Teachings of Kapila Dev 3.
Yeah.
And the quote is, "The demigods have many activities, but Krishna is always peaceful. The Krishna who engages in killing the demons is Vasudev Krishna, not the original Krishna."
Yeah, thank you. Great. If you want to study more about the incarnations of Lord Krishna, I would recommend you to study Laghu Bhagavatamrita, with commentary by Gopi Pranjan Prabhu. It's very, very, very detailed. Did you have a question, Mataji?
It's more a comment. In my mind, it just came up that it's kind of like if you're dealing with your boss, you have to talk to him about work when he's at work.
Mm.
You can't just like expect to break into his family life.
Yeah, yeah.
Directly, unless you're his family.
It's true.
This was just a thought with regard to Roman Prabhu's question.
Yes.
I'm not a very experienced book distributor, so it may or may not be relevant,
yeah,
for you. But I just thought that, you know, if someone is completely uninterested in the subject of God,
yeah,
then you can't really talk to them about God, right? Because they're not interested.
Mm.
But, you know, Krishna does say there are four types of people who end up coming to me.
Yes.
So we can persuade them to become one of those four types of people. You can engage them intellectually,
yeah,
or you can point out their distress.
Mm.
Or there are two other ways. Like one project that, for example, Keshe Maharaj is doing right now is like, he's not approaching people in a preaching mood.
Yeah.
There's no jargons and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's just simply talking in terms that people can understand, like,
yes,
completely mundane.
Yeah.
He's using words that are more mundane,
yeah,
so that people can kind of relate to it, and then they'll be maybe like, oh, maybe, you know, there's more to,
yeah,
to this later on, but they can decide for themselves.
It's true, it's true.
Initially, he's just addressing people's mundane,
yeah, yeah, 100%,
thought process.
100%.
In fact, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. You can preach to someone just by giving them prasadam. You know, you don't have to speak any philosophy. And prasadam will create the agata qualification. You know, so Prakashananda Saraswati, he took the hands of Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada explains he started his devotional life. He got agata sukriti. I'll just say one thing and I'll finish here. So I read about there was a devotee who was distributing books, and he came across this guy who was famous for approaching devotees, taking a book, ripping it up, you know, and he was doing that all the time, you know, completely offensive. But he was touching the book, that person ended up becoming a devotee in our movement and is a leader in our movement. I mean, I don't know who he is, but one Prabhupada disciple was talking about him. So just touching the book, and he's doing it in an offensive way. You know, even, you know, like we see people on the streets when they see devotees doing Harinam, they laugh at us. They, you know, they ingest, they're saying, oh, these guys are really funny, you know. They look weird, you know, and but it has an effect. Just, you know, just by giving oral reception, it doesn't matter if you understand it or not, it will have an effect on you. And so Krishna consciousness is very powerful. It doesn't depend on your mundane understanding. It will penetrate anything. Shabda Brahman will penetrate anything and it will have the effect. Okay, I'll finish here. So I need to get to the dentist. Anyway, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.